Hey, it's Bill Simmons. Did you know I've had my podcast for 15 years? Do you know that it is the most downloaded sports podcast of all time? Did you know I have guests from the sports world, from the culture world, people who work for The Ringer, people outside The Ringer, celebrities, experts, you name it. It's on my podcast 3 times a week, late Sunday night, late Tuesday night, late Thursday night, the Bill Simmons podcast. Check it out on Spotify.
Bro, man, how can you be making tea now, bro? Man's trying to do the recording. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Writer's House on Ringer FC. Hope you are all safe and well. Today, we're going to talk about the Merseyside derby, Arsenal versus Manchester United, and some other Premier League results, plus a little bit about the WSL and Real Betis winning the Copa del Rey. And my guests are Mr. Kwonga and Mr. Carl Anka. Yo, Carl Anka, I haven't seen you for a while. I love Moose, but wow, my brother's
it's
back.
It's been a minute. My brother, how are we doing?
Yeah, good, good. Really good, Carlos. My brother, yes, really good. Moose, you good?
You're very well indeed. Listen, all cylinders. On all cylinders.
it's been an unbelievable week. And I got to say, I went to Liverpool yesterday. And you know what was beautiful about going to Liverpool and going to a game, just a normal game? I've not rolled up on a game like that.
Wow.
I don't know. Because I was able to go. And the crowd was already formed. They were at the stall. You could see them there. And when you walked to Liverpool, you had to walk through the crowd. It was so vibrant and so amazing.
Incredible.
Just to be able to do that again. And the Liverpool hospitality, bro. Jesus Christ. It's a massive club. And obviously, it's very corporate and everything what they're doing is all. But it's still intimate and brilliant and lovely. You know, in that little, like, in the hospitality room what they had. The people were so real. Mm. And I was in there with Meatball Molly, bro. Meatball Molly's a massive, massive Everton fan, bro. No one could deal with that smoke on that. No one. I think, you know what it was? They were all kind of scared of her, bro.
No one
she would
it.
Shout out her stuff. They would say stuff about Liverpool. She would start, like when people were singing stuff, she would stand up and like say, you better not sing
amazing.
That. You better not sing that. But like, I loved the occasion. I love going there because I've got an affinity with that club simply because when I was younger, my brothers and all the older guys supported Liverpool, watched a lot of Liverpool cop stuff when they played European football, Shankly. And so going there, like I mentioned, when I first saw the time, I went there, lost 9-0. But going there in that vibe, in this current climate, guys, was amazing. It's just brilliant. It's fantastic.
They're enjoying it. I know obviously everyone talks about, you know, Anfield and special European nights, but there is something different to that club on certain evenings, you know. And I often think about, there's a great series of quotes from Sir Bobby Robson where he describes what a football club is. And he says, ultimately, a football club is like a shared collection of memories. And there are certain cities where you can see they can go to the well a lot more and be like, look, here's all of our amazing memories. I'm going to play them all at this like amazing time. And I think Liverpool's really good at that. I know Manchester can be really good at that. There's a guy who like rides around on a bicycle in Manchester holding a boombox, and we just call him Boombox Barry. And he's like the constant spirit of Manchester, just reminding you of its history all the time. I think Liverpool is also, you know, Liverpool is a great city that always remembers. And I think Anfield's just good for that sort of stuff. And that's why that derby is.
Do you know what's funny about this derby, though? The energy around it, obviously, going into it always is incredible. And it's one of those games which meant so much, right? The game meant everything. Well, obviously, Liverpool 2, Everton 0 ended up. But Everton did their absolute best to absolutely stifle the atmosphere in this. And I have to say, they went to a level, I'm not sure I've seen an English football club, with the exception of Jose Mourinho's Chelsea, and they went to Liverpool that time and got the 2-0. That's the only other time I've seen
that.
That's
pretty much it.
No coincidence, it's Anfield, of course, Carl. No coincidence. But it's the only other time I've seen a team go with that level of not just energy, but execution. And I'm not even criticizing it that much because I kind of see what Everton felt they had to do. But I also think that when you do a thing like that, you need to have slightly more ideas.
Absolutely.
You need to have a backup.
Absolutely bang on, because all the shithousery was going on, and it was. You know, Richarlison, I have to say, Richarlison, that's his game. He's going down. He's frustrating. He's doing that stuff anyway. But yesterday, whether Frank told him to do it more, to wind him up more, I don't know. Whether he told Jordan Pickford to make sure that you continually get the ball, fall down, take as much time as you want. Just to, because what they needed to do, right? And it was really interesting, because at one stage, Everton fans started singing, where's your famous atmosphere, right? So I think that was something what they genuinely were trying to do. They were trying to take away everything from the Liverpool atmosphere. You know, because I have to say, Richarlison, so the referees and stuff, at some stage, they're going to have to try and say, right, what are we going to do about this? Because this, he's okay. He's going down in a way where sometimes you think, is he genuinely hurt? Is he injured? And up to this point, from the time I've watched him, Moose, he never is. Now, I don't think it's just because it was Everton yesterday and Liverpool and there was more intensity on it, and watching it was more frustrating. But in that scenario and in that setting, it was working, because the people around us, even where we were sitting, the people around, you could feel it. You could see the anger, because you could just look down the side there, and the venom and the vociferousness in which people were shouting down at this guy. It was like they were. It was happening. Now, the problem that they had is that they had no sharp end. With the pace of Richarlison, the pace of Gordon, which was unbelievable yesterday, you know, the pace of Demarre Gray, I'm thinking to myself, why didn't they, if the plan was to frustrate and stifle, which they'd done very, very well in the first half, there was no spaces, there was hardly any spaces, no spaces to run into, nothing. Then what was the plan once you did get the ball?
Now, yes, this is the most damning indictment on a coaching perspective, because Lampard has played in a team that's done this. Barcelona, when Chelsea knocked out Barcelona on the run to the final, Lampard played a switch, right, in behind Dani Alves, and it was the opening goal for Drogba, and that was the vital goal. And that game was, that thing was practiced religiously. The switch was practiced, because everyone knows that Dani Alves likes to come high as a fullback. And this is credit to Trent, right, because ever since a large chunk of football Twitter decided, once and for all, that Trent could not defend, his defending in crucial games has been outstanding, and there was not space behind him. So his recovery runs, the space they were probably looking for behind him in particular, because Robertson is the fullback you won't really expose, because he's up and down, you know, he's doing his job. Defensively, he's been solid for the last few years. You can name probably his bad games on, I mean, what, on two
fingers.
On two fingers, right, exactly.
Max,
thank you.
Yes,
three fingers,
yeah,
max.
Two, yeah.
Whereas Trent, there's a conversation about whether he gets some down leads. He left no spaces. So there was no room for the switch, and also the quick pass through the middle wasn't there. And I'm thinking to myself here, there's a lack of confidence by Lampard, right? Because his ball players were not, Alan and Iwobi are good enough to pick passes, right? But they were not empowered to pick out those passes. And we know that Lampard empowers his players, because Pickford was empowered for time wasting. That man came up to poop the party, right? But his ball players, it wasn't like, at no point did I get the impression that Lampard was like, okay, we're going to absorb pressure, and then that's going to be the channel, bang, inside left, inside right, gone. I got no sense from his tactics. That was everything that he had practiced.
You know something, Moose? It didn't look like it. And if he did, then they didn't execute it, because I believe if Richarlison puts the energy into being available to whether Alan or Doucouré or Iwobi or whoever it is, there's a way of playing that kind of centre-forward role away from home where you can frustrate and do that stuff without being so antagonising and so petulant with what he was doing and was falling over and there's nothing wrong. That's what I think the focus should have been on.
Yes.
You know, the focus should have more been not on Jordan Pickford getting the ball and getting it on the right-hand side of the goal and then walking slowly over to the left-hand side, taking his time when he caught it, fall to the ground, put it down, take so long to kick it. They should have made that happen with Richarlison. He should have been the focal point of the shithousery and the time wasting.
Because they're not built for this. They're not built for this. Oh, we can turn up. You can't be at lefty. Listen, you can't watch. Do you know what? It's like watching a bare knuckle fight on TV and think you can go and be the Warriors. You can't be the Warriors. You have to come out and play. You have to go out and play. You have to actually have a bare knuckle fight. And these people, you can't suddenly transfer them from the School of Science into Atleti in two games.
I got to say though, the start of the game. Start of the game, Trent. Well, Trent was very nervy at the start of that game. You know, I don't know if it's because obviously he's from the, he was very nervy. His passes, he weren't great. I was thinking, wow, let's see what's happening. Same with Thiago, didn't have the space to work in. You see Jota, and what was really brilliant about being able to watch it from that vantage point is watching the movement and the lack of space that Everton gave them to try and move into. So every pass that went into the last third was contested. Allen was there. Doucouré was there. Did you see
Doucouré?
Gnarly and think Doucouré was, he got really vexed. You know, got really vexed.
He's,
you know,
great. He's,
it was like, it was, they needed that. It's the same as when I watched his fingers go. The same as when I watched it.
Just almost
just
there.
So close. It's the just same as like, yeah, but Moose, you know, you say that they haven't, Frank hasn't got that, I don't know, the acumen, whatever it is to see that through. It's the same thing at Palace in the cup.
Yes.
They the started release. In a yes. way. Yes. And I'm thinking they need to build on this because at home, at Everton, they've definitely got something, especially with, they've got to try and find it with Damari Gray. They do because Gordon's got it. Gordon's got it. They've got to find it with Damari Gray. With that kind of pace with him and Damari Gray, they've got to find the release. They've got it at home, but away from home, if they could find it, especially with those two players and let the dogs of war go to war. Like you see, Doucouré's capable of it. Allen's capable of it. All of them, even Seamus Coleman was doing his stuff. They're all capable of it. But then, like against Palace, something happens and it kind of falls apart.
The thing I'll say about Klopp in this game, I actually thought Thiago was my favourite player on the pitch, to be honest. I thought he was extraordinary. But what I'll say about this was Klopp, I think, almost anticipated this is how Everton were going to come out. Just from the team that he set up with and knowing that he had the subs that he had waiting, particularly Luis Diaz, like, so when he came on against those tiring legs, I know it's the cliche, but I think that's a more effective substitution in a game like that where you can stretch the game. And I think he was almost like, okay, bring them on, break them down, wear them down. You've got a slightly subpar Mo Salah. Mo Salah is still not as sharp as he was maybe half of his season. Just, it is what it is. It's just wear and tear. You know, it's a long season.
It's a fun one because we're talking right now, and obviously we're doing the vote for the Football Writers Awards for Player of the Season, both men's and women's game, and there are, you know, if you look at the whole season, you go, right, who is the standout candidate? Who is the best football player in this Premier League season? And things like the just off colour Mo Salah recent form. These are things that play into your thinking. So
I voted for Kevin De Bruyne, to be honest. And I did that because if you win a league title it looks like they might still just squeak it out over Liverpool without a primary centre forward. That is because your ball circulation has been absolutely supreme. Someone has been running that attack. And Bernardo Silva, I think, has been brilliant, of course, but the chief orchestrator in that is De Bruyne. And I just think that he has basically covered a multitude of sins.
You know what, Moose? This is what you've said there is bang on. And you have to think as well to do it without an out-and-out striker. And he's still getting through that work. Can you imagine the assist he's going to have when Haaland does actually roll into town?
Oh, my
it's
goodness.
It's like fucking hell, bro. It's almost like it's not fair. It's like it's not fair. And we're talking about, I think... Haaland goes to any team in any league and he improves them. And if you're going to put De Bruyne behind him, then it's good night. You have to look at... I watched Mo again yesterday and what you see with Mo Salah, and if Liverpool can't get that switch quick enough for him to control it and go at the one person, if they take their time, and Everton done it very well in the first half. The second half, they got a bit deeper in what they were trying to do, getting it down to him, and he was getting down there, then he cuts back and he lays it back in to Thiago, whoever's waiting. But I find that switch sometimes in Liverpool, by the time it gets to him, it's two people, and you know he's going to faint down the right, he's going to go, and then he's going to cut back on the left, then he's going to try and lay it back to, he's going to lay it back to Trent or whoever's there. And I think that, you know, when he's in top form, that gets there quicker and he goes at that man quicker. And we've seen him score the goal where he's dribbled through those kind of two or three players and score. But I've seen it twice. So at Watford and Man City, I saw it Tottenham before. We've seen it happen maybe once a season. But people are wise to the fact that once that ball's going to go out there, we need to make sure that we get those players in front of Mo.
Yes.
And I think that that's what's happening with Mo. He's just like, the ball's not running for him when he's trying to run through them, and it just, bam, it breaks down, and bam, that's the Mo Salah we're getting at the moment.
Yeah. It's unfortunate. It's kind of, he's kind of created his own problem. He's like, oh, okay. Like, you know, I've been watching a lot of basketball recently. Kevin Durant for the Brooklyn Nets. And it's the same thing, right? Durant was unstoppable early in the season, and now they just double and triple this guy. Like, the moment he gets, and you know, there's a thing in basketball, same in football, you get to your spot. There's spots you like scoring from, running from. And every time Salah gets to his spot, they are waiting for
him.
They're ready. They've already set
up.
Yeah.
They're waiting.
Should we talk about out and out number nine by the name of Divock Origi?
Divock Origi.
Yes.
You know what's really cool is the ovation that Divock was getting when he was just getting up to warm. Just to warm up. It was just like, it's almost like, you know what? When the Liverpool fans are like, yeah, man, this is kind of tight. This is fucking shit. They're like, Divock, man. Divock Origi, bro. Bring in Divock Origi. He should stay. I know people say, nah, you got to go and play in that. But why would you want to leave this Liverpool side, bro? Why would you want to leave this Liverpool? What's going on when you've got a role where you're not even playing for a certain amount of minutes in the game? You're not playing tonight, but the fans are happy to see you for 5 or 10 minutes. They want to see you. And he comes on and he delivers.
He broke the game open. Yes. He broke the entire game open. And this is the thing, like, it wasn't like some... He wasn't scatty or erratic. He was smart. He was smart. Mm. Like, the near post run. Yeah. So he knew mm-hmm. exactly what was Salah having trouble doing. He was having trouble breaking the double team at the near post. What does he do? He gets in the most horrible to mark pocket where you go into the 6-yard box and you come off your man. Mm. That is one of the hardest things to mark, right? Because you are like, most people are going the opposite direction at that point, right? Do you know what it's like? You know when you're commuting? There was one time I was living down in Surrey for a bit and I get the train opposite the commute. So you're past, all the packed trains are going in one direction, you're going the other direction.
You're swimming upstream.
Exactly. Exactly. Origi made the most counterintuitive movement because he came out of the box and that's a nightmare to mark. He combined with Salah and that was it. That was the game changer. Yeah. And then even his awareness for the second, for his goal, right? The bounce pass that he gets and he's on it. And I'm like, he's crashing the box. It's class. Like, he does two of the most classic piece of centre forward play in one of the highest pressure games. Like, it was nothing. Yeah.
Remarkable. Guys, he's been so efficient. It's almost like, you know, when somebody, he's learned how to be the perfect substitute.
Yes.
So he's like, he's watching from the bench and seeing that, like the movements you're talking about, Moose, staying in the box. Because one of the things with Liverpool, as much as Jota, Mane or Salah, no one actually patrols and is in and around that 6-yard box and in that middle of that goal. Even Firmino. To a certain extent, we see him in there sometimes tapping it and then tapping the ball in. But no one really patrols it in a way where you say, if I was on the Liverpool bench, I'd be watching us saying, as soon as I get on, I'm working in there.
Yes, yes.
Mm. Because all of a sudden, Everton defenders have got to say, there's somebody moving in an area that there wasn't no one there before.
Yes, they're not familiar.
So someone, who's taking it? Is he coming to you? And then bam, you know what I mean? It's chaotic. They're already... thinking, oh my God, what would he do now? What do we do now? But with him, knowing that you could sit on the bench, knowing that, yeah, man, just chill, man. I can relax. I'm going to relax for 60 minutes, 70 minutes. But because you're going onto a team, it's almost the same as if you're sitting there getting ready to go on when you know that you've got Kevin De Bruyne behind you.
Yes.
If you go on, the opportunity and the chances that you are going to get and the chance you're as a striker, you say, I only need to work 10-15 minutes this weekend again.
And he's done it like, he's scored like what, 4 or 5 times against them?
It's nine games and 6 goals against Everton.
Unbelievable. That is...
Which I think is, he's amazing because obviously we talk about modern football, how your striker needs to do so much more than just putting the ball in the net. But Origi's got such a precise role in this Liverpool team, right? So it's very much, Sadio Mane is about link-up play. He plays in this 10 role, he does this and he does this. Firmino is all about pressing and leading the press. Jota now is the person that does headers. Salah's got his job. And you know, Diaz is coming with his job. And Divock's now got his job of, for 10 and 15 minutes, I want you to cause as much chaos in and around the 6-yard box as possible. Mm. And it's also strangely egoless. Right?
Yeah. Like, you have to be a special player, Carl. I can't remember too many players who have played that role for so long, and is, we don't know deep down if he's happy doing it, but it doesn't seem like he's unhappy doing it. And like I said, why would you want to leave Liverpool? But I don't see too many people who would be so accepting of that role because of what it entails. You might get on. But what Divock Origi does is that in very, very important and clutch games, they do call for him and he does answer the call.
All the time. Mm-hmm. All the time.
Every time. Every time. Every time.
I'm not even sure. I mean, I was going to draw on that. I'm not even sure I've got a friend like that. Like, you know, like one, you're like, who has a friend who is basically a rescuer?
It's equivalent. Is that one friend you see maybe once a year?
Once every 3 years.
I'm trying to think. I don't know any player that is happier doing it. And
do you know what? I'm not even sure that Divock was in the country prior to coming on. I think he... they helicoptered him in.
Oh, gosh.
You do wonder, because the Premier League's going to 5 substitutes next season, might that open up a role for Divock at Liverpool, to stay at Liverpool? Because Klopp, I mean, we know Klopp loves him, but I saw the hug at the end of the game. Klopp said he's the most amazing player and he needs to play more football.
Yes.
And I think that's going to be a fun one of, does Divock play more football somewhere else, getting more minutes, perhaps being a starter, or is he going to go, wait, there's,
you know,
5
something,
subs,
Carl,
there's more
Carl,
of a chance
that's a great
for me to
question,
stay here.
You know?
Yes, but the thing with that is Carl, is if he goes, Liverpool lose, as people think, yeah, because he's substituting this and that, but Liverpool fans, Klopp knows, and the players know, even the players, there's a certain time when you're on there and you think, I wish he would come on. We've got to bring him on at some stage. There's a certain... I think that if Liverpool got rid of Divock Origi now, they'd get rid of, I think, a very vital component in when it's not quite working for Firmino, it's not quite working for Mane, it's not quite working for Salah, it's not happening for Jota. Especially like that first half. If they get second halves like that first half, you need Divock Origi. Like whatever you say about him, he could go elsewhere and play. Liverpool and the way Liverpool are functioning right now is vital to what they're doing. And I think that he almost like he can feel it, he's sensing it. We're coming into Divock Origi territory at this stage of the season.
Do you know actually
this
works?
This is Divock time. It's Divock time.
Do you want to say this? Because I know we have to bounce and get onto the Arsenal United, but I want to get on this very quickly on Origi. Imagine how good he must be in training to trust at this stage of a game. This thing,
he must have swagger.
Yeah, because Klopp doesn't do passengers. We know this about him. We know he rotates well. So the fact that Origi is maintaining a level, and it's sad because you see someone like Dele Alli, for example, who is Dele Alli, who is the kind of player, he should be deciding games of this nature. He has the technique, he has the quality. But I think with him, unfortunately, it's just like there's such a long way back for him. In terms of, I mean, I don't hesitate to say sort of psychologically, but I mean, it is, I think his challenges are not, they're not technical. We know his technique is what it is. But there's the sort of the psychological challenges of just finding your place, not only within Everton, but within, you know, the Premier League. And does he even remember how to be that great again? I worry and I wonder about it, to be honest. So Arsenal, Manchester United.
One sec before you move on, a quick shout out to Man City, who put 5 in against Watford, because again, it's not the same though with Man City against Watford, because Watford kind of had a little bit, the left back, Kamara looks really good, but it was very routine. Mm-hmm. It's very routine. It's like what Everton done to Liverpool was a lot tougher. Watford was routine. 14 straight games they've won against Watford.
It was interesting to see Gabriel Jesus playing like a proper 9.
Oh gosh, he was awesome.
That was the thing, wasn't it, Carl? Awesome. Like seeing him actually be like, awesome. Okay, this is the player that Manchester City signed and has been, let's be honest, kind of repressed because of...
He popped up everywhere, Moose. He was everywhere.
This was the man that was originally envisioned to be Sergio Aguero's successor, right? That was the plan.
This was it, right? I mean, he saw it in this game. Like, I know some will say it was only Watford. No, like he earned the penalty and scored it and he got the assist. Like that is a complete centre-forward performance.
Complete performance. And but people will say, yes, Watford, and they give him time and space. That's how Jesus plays. That's how he plays. He's everywhere.
Yeah.
And anywhere he pops up, he knows exactly what he's doing in that particular part of the pitch. You know, elite player. Clutch as well.
A true.
You know, another one that you think to yourself, he's somebody as well, just quickly on him, who's spent a lot of time on Manchester City's bench and is still at this stage coming on in games like that. And let's face it, it could have been a lot worse if Watford had anything more about them, and still came with everything that he's got in his locker. Came with everything. And when a player like him comes with everything they've got in locker, Watford got no chance. They've got no chance because he's coming, and whatever Pep does and whatever Klopp does to keep these players going and keep their minds right to come on and do the job for them, they're doing it, man. And they've got to get a lot of credit for it.
How ironic he finally becomes...
Go on.
Ironic he finally becomes the nine that Manchester City need, just when they're about to sign that guy.
Oh my gosh. Oh gosh.
This is the thing about this Premier League. This is the thing about... So obviously, you know, this weekend we've seen Bayern Munich win the Bundesliga 10 times in a row. Mm. And there were a lot of people going, oh, the Bundesliga is a rubbish league. You know, where's all the talent? And you're going, it's in the Premier League. it's in the league you think is so brilliant. You bear in mind, so Jurgen Klopp said, we've got Naby Keita and we've got Thiago, two of the best midfielders of the Bundesliga. Right? Thomas Tuchel is now the Chelsea manager. If you look at Kai Havertz is playing false nine for Chelsea. You think about the last 5 years of the Bundesliga, nearly every good player and every great talent in that last 5 years, they're in and around the Premier League. They're either in the Premier League now or they're being linked to the Premier League.
Yeah.
Firmino
is so influential in the Premier League, one of the most influential forwards we've seen in the last 5 years. Yeah, has redefined, right? That position in many ways. Yeah.
People have got to stop saying that about the Bundesliga because the Premier League's just taking them.
They won't stop saying it though. It's a football podcast. We know they're not going to stop saying it. But yeah, on Arsenal, Manchester United, I want to get onto that. I don't want to, but I think we should.
I want to.
No, you two should. You two should. I'm here for you.
Okay, so let's get into it. So Arsenal 3, Manchester United 1 at the Emirates. Mm. The thing I'll say about this, first of all, headline is this is an outstanding win for Arsenal, one they very much needed to put their top four hopes back on track. What I'll say about this is at no point did anybody feel in control of this game. Not the players, not Manchester United, not Arsenal, not the referee, not the crowd. At no point did anybody take responsibility, actually. No one took responsibility. Actually, no, with the exception of Bukayo Saka.
Yes.
Bless him. Bless Bukayo. Because Bukayo came correct.
Mohamed Elneny, bro. Yeah,
Elneny, he's been on one recently.
Affecting games. Another player.
We're talking about players who come on and do the job for their manager with unbelievable professionalism. All the three players as well we're speaking about, it seems like their managers, their teams, they absolutely adore them. Mm. But Mohamed Elneny, you know, somebody, again, maybe leaving at the end of the season, you look at that performance and the one against Chelsea and you can only think to yourself, if Arsenal are trying to build a team to challenge and be in top four and stay in there, you need that backup player. That player has to stay. Because for him to come in those two games, arguably two of the biggest games in Arsenal's calendar, you know, with whatever Man United are playing like at the moment and Chelsea, those are massive games at any stage of the calendar for Arsenal. And him to come in, the last time he played was December the 2nd, the last time he started a game. For him to come in and play at that level, again, you're talking about what Divock might be like in training and stuff like that. What he must be like is, you have to say, hats off to him. You know, I might have to give him flowers on this episode.
Oh, definitely. This man came through AFCON and World Cup qualifiers. This man was battle ready. This is the thing. He wasn't playing regularly for Arsenal, but he was in the cauldron for a long time. And so in many ways, that experience, that Egypt experience, the kind of pressure you have to absorb, like playing in the Egypt midfield, it's actually perfect training for this kind of intensity, if you think about it.
You know something, Moose? You know what I was going to say about the Man United game, and it's not being disrespectful, because I think that I've got the most amount of respect for Manchester United, because playing against them at a time when they were at the height of their powers was not very pleasant. So to see them how they are now, there's a sadness to it. And playing against Palace, Brighton, and Southampton, I was more nervous about those three teams because of the way those three coaches would set themselves up to make it very difficult for Arsenal to beat them. And that came to pass. Then I was about Man United, because when you watch Man United against Norwich, when he put out all the guns and all the offensiveness, and Norwich took them apart, two passes, sometimes three passes, and they're on the edge of their box. and we're talking about like the Pookies of this world, Dows and that. We're talking about a team like Norwich literally passing through them at will. So I'm thinking we are so much more organised than Man United. The only way we're going to lose this game is through naivety and inexperience.
Yes, yes.
That's how I felt going into the Man United game.
Carl, can I say something that really worries me about United at the moment? Something I'm noticing. It's just online, of course, but I see quite a lot of it. Our midfield play and our coordination attack has so disintegrated that United fans, and actually some pundits as well, are getting excited by the idea of players who run around with tactical indiscipline but just kind of kick out a bit. Like, that's how much it's disintegrated, to the point where, like, oh, that person shows they care, that person's making us. No, that's not.
Oh, was that like Hannibal? Was that like Hannibal against Liverpool? I mean, that Gary
Neville said. It was mentioned in relation to him, but just some other players as well. And I was like, have we really disintegrated to the point where, well, the answer is yes, we have, I think, that we are cheering on just conspicuous but ineffective toil. Is that is that what this has come to?
Well, that's it has to be allied with something. It has to be... You know, the Bruce Lee quote from Enter the Dragon, you need emotional content, not anger.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what, seeing Bruno, Carl, just lashing out at people, seeing lash out at Trent really wildly, and that and the challenges in the Arsenal game, I can't remember who it was against.
It's been a simmering thing with Fernandes.
Tavares, yeah. And you look at it and you think to yourself, that's not what Man United need from you, my friend. They need a lot more than you going around trying to top people. You know, he's lucky to not get sent off. But, like, I think that's what it's come down to. And, you know, this is why I was worried for Arsenal, because, like, against Chelsea, I think that we are definitely at our most vulnerable when we've just scored.
Yeah, it's almost like, it's funny because I thought
it's really strange.
Cristiano Ronaldo actually had really quite a good game, I thought. I thought he was very, very, very effective. And it was almost like Arsenal didn't feel they deserved it. You know, like, when I've used this analogy many times, but the 2006 World Cup final, when France go a goal up with that Panenka by Zidane, it's so weird because France don't own it. At no point after going a goal up do they own that World Cup final. It's the weirdest performance. It's like, oh my God, we've won a lot. What now? We might actually win this thing again. And Arsenal had the similar energy. They went this goal up and it was like, okay, now the procession begins. You've scored four goals against Chelsea in the midweek and now you're going to roll on. And when I saw them talking about making Martin Odegaard the captain, I was like, oh, and I'm not criticizing him, by the way. I'm like, it reminded me, my God, this team is so young. This is why it's hard for them. And this is a thing. It's why it's hard for Arsenal to just be like, to clamp a game down and be like, because they just don't have hundreds of games of game management behind them. Because if you have a Casemiro or a Modric in their mid-30s, who's just like, okay, this is what we do. Let's just take this thing out of it. This game is a lot calmer. And once they get that kind of profile of player, once they get, and it only is like one or two signings, if they get that profile of player in the door, it's going to change everything, because there's going to be that 20-minute period where they just control tempo, and that's going to be the difference.
Because you look at United, you look at United, Ronaldo's, and this is why for me, when you're doing the punditry and when you're kind of talking about a team and you're analysing them, Ronaldo's offside wasn't a blatant offside. His heel, we're talking about fractions of his heel. So if we're talking about the margins, you know what I mean? Then the penalty miss. You know, so with everything what we're saying about United and the lack of midfield cohesion, whatever it is, they still create enough chances to win the game. And this is why with Arsenal, it worries me, simply because, like you rightly said, Moose, it's almost like we're afraid to get hold of the game, or we can't get hold of the game and pull them onto us and pass through them and just kind of take some sting out of the game. Because, you know, United, with their chances, great save again from Aaron Ramsdale, from Dalot, I think it was. Ronaldo's fractionally offside goal, Fernandes, his penalty miss. What I would say to Arsenal fans is that you've still got to be patient and realise we're dealing with a team, a young team. And I was speaking to Ryan, like Ryan was saying about, listening to Mikel, I think it was Mikel, talking about how, you know what, I just love this team. It's like you've got your little kid, you're telling him stuff and you're saying, don't do that. You're going to hurt yourself if you do that. And they said, yeah, okay, yeah, I get it. And then they kind of still do it because they're young and they're naive to stuff. So you have to get through it to learn it.
Can I be cheeky?
You have to learn how to win. I really like how Arteta uses it. So Arteta, he wants to use the word roller coaster, but it always sounds as rolling coaster, which I quite enjoy, because the rolling implies it's a little bit more circuitous and takes, you know, you have to do a couple more loops for it all to click.
Yes, yes.
And he was in a good mood He was in a good mood after that victory. I was at Emirates.
He had a smiley kind of like, listen, man, I know he messes up sometimes, but he's my son, man. I love him.
Yes. Can I say I'm a bit?
Yes, that was
felt.
The meaning.
That's how it felt. Yeah, that's the vibe. That's the vibe. The energy. What was it?
He said, everything is energy.
Everything is energy. It's just amazing. It's a t-shirt, man. We got to do it. Ryan said he wants to do a t-shirt. We got to do everything is energy.
So like,
go on, Moose.
So yeah, I want to just throw a hot take in there because we've talked about the Bundesliga and everything like that. And I think that Arsenal need to find their David Alaba. So they should actually just be really cheeky and go for someone at Bayern who's won several games, several leagues in a row. They should be like really cheeky and like talk to someone like Leon Goretzka because you don't know until you ask. You don't know until you ask. And this, I'm just throwing that hot take out there because I want them to think. Yes, I'm throwing that.
But Moussa, you say that and we laugh, but like it takes that. You need
I'm only half joking vision. Because I want them to get a player who is basically need like, okay, now we manage the game for 20 minutes. Now we just take this thing out.
Can you imagine Arsenal? Yeah. Can you imagine Arsenal with Eddie Nketiah? So unlucky, Eddie. He scored two goals against Chelsea. He had a great chance in that game where he just kind of like, in that moment, his composure left him because he hit it so high. And it was one of those where you need to just calm down and slot it down the side of De Gea because De Gea is in no man's land.
Yeah.
And it's with Eddie Nketiah playing like he is, Saka and Smith Rowe and Erdogan, with that experienced player in there, honestly, it's not much.
You see what I'm saying?
Much.
It's not much. They need to find that profile of player who is like looking for a new challenge, basically like a slightly younger, obviously like a younger, so like a Rakitic player. They just need someone who's been in and around multiple successes. And that player is somewhere in Europe and probably primarily a midfielder, I would say at this point. Because I think the defence is actually moving in the right direction. Does that make sense, Carl? So I think they need that kind of...
It's there's the German-Dutch coaching term called pressing variance. And Arteta's talked about it with Martinelli, about how basically you have to insert gears into his game. Because when you are 18, 19, no matter whatever you want to go everywhere all at once in all directions and everything has to be done today or tomorrow or this week. And you get to your 20s and you understand, actually, no, your to-do list doesn't always need to be complete. And sometimes you do everything all at once. The reward for doing your work well isn't less work, it's more work. Mm. And you get this with Arsenal. Like, the reward for scoring a goal early in a Premier League game isn't you get to coast for 80 minutes. You probably need to score another goal because they're going to come at you even harder. And because you're young, you need to figure that out. You need that 27, 28-year-old person who's had two kids and goes, you know what? Like, you can calm down at 3:15.
Yes. absolutely.
So Carl, we have to talk about Ten Hag, man. Erik Ten Hag, and this guy again is going into a situation where you can't turn down Manchester United. This is the vibe I'm getting from it, because if you are going to turn down Man United in any time in their history, it's probably now, and he's not done that.
This is big for Erik ten Hag, for Manchester United, for the Premier League in general. I mean, you talk again about the amount of talent we've got in the Premier League. I think Ten Hag is probably top 10, top 15 tactical minds. You think about just how many incredibly smart managers are in the Premier League now. You're going to add Ten Hag to that as well. He's going to have his own interpretation of how to play possession-based football. He's going to have his own version of what Johan Cruyff said as well. But it's not a slam dunk, because Manchester United, I don't think you can say anything is a slam dunk right now. There have been so many people that have come through, that have gone through that football club now, that we have thought were geniuses or incredibly talented people, that have just been overwhelmed by chaos and dysfunction. I always come back to that. I think, is it Van Halen? The band that, you know, every time they go on tour, the band when they go on tour, they say they want a bowl of M&Ms, but they want the brown ones removed. And I was like, oh, you're massive divas. And they say, no, we want the brown ones removed, because if you go and play a gig and we see a bowl with brown M&Ms in there, that means the person hasn't read the contract. And Ten Hag is doing his own version of the brown M&Ms with this contract at Manchester United. And I think whatever he does, he's going to want to be like, you all have to be pulling in the same direction. I know you think, you know, I know you are Manchester United, but if you want to be in the position Manchester United want to be, you need to behave like that every single day. And that means no more cutting corners. That means no more. I mean, I think it's quite interesting that Manchester United's also talking about getting Old Trafford renovated, where, you know, Old Trafford as a football stadium isn't what it used to be. Mm. The Wi-Fi there is pretty bad. The paint is chipped. Something that sticks in my memory last season was when Edinson Cavani signed his new contract. He was, the photographs of him on the signing the contract at the table. The table was chipped.
Oh my goodness.
The paint is gone. It's like just a little bit dull and there's little scuff marks. Yeah. And you're going, it's those tiny things that separate Manchester United from capital letters written in gold, Premier League trophy, Manchester United, and what all the, you know, the clubs that are above them in the table are doing, right? It's a difficult time for Manchester United fans, but you hope that if they properly support Ten Hag, he can do something over the next 2 or 3 years that could completely turn the Premier League table on its head again.
Yeah, that's Carl, you've just laid it out so well, and I feel like if there's anything, you know, because obviously there are question marks over the appointment. There will be because he's not managed in the Premier League. Always. And so there's all those other challenges coming in. But, you know, it won't stop him being brilliant. I suppose this is the thing, isn't it? The fact that if there's any consolation for United fans, it's that Rangnick has set out exactly what's wrong with the club. We've seen the full disrepair, and it feels like Ten Hag kind of has a mandate to come in and put those paint jobs on the table and take care of the small details and do all that stuff to kind of, not micromanage, I'm not saying that, but has the kind of the authority, the carte blanche to come in and really just build from the ground up. And we've talked so much about patience at United, but I think this is, I would say almost like just to treat the next year as just play football that is recognisably United. It doesn't even necessarily matter about, you know, qualification so much at the end of the next year. It's really just play football that's recognisably United at this point. And then go from there.
So I was actually saying, I don't think it's a bad thing if United didn't play any European football once Ten Hag comes in. You know, because that's the kind of total reset they probably need. Mm. You know, but people talk about Man United not being in Europe. Oh, Man United too, but they should be in Europe. Of course they should be. But Man United are going through a period in their history where something needs to stop and change. You have to arrest the development at the minute, because Man United are still, you know what I mean? They're going nowhere very, very quickly. And now they've got another manager. Whereas, you know, you've got the same people upstairs, the same people making decisions upstairs, but now they've just gone for the next manager, where no matter if he's shiny or he's not shiny. We've seen them go for unbelievable experience, you know, Van Gaal, with Mourinho, with everything. They went Moyes, they've gone with their own in Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, you know what I mean? And now they've gone interim with Ralph Rangnick. Since Alex Ferguson, they've done everything. So why not just kind of get a reset and let this man try and do his stuff? Because, you know what I mean, he's meant to be a very, very good coach. Let him do it. And then I know that they got rid of two scouts. I don't know if that's something that he's said, well, get rid of them and then did it up because I'm going to bring this or that. But you don't know what's going on. But what you're hoping is that they give this guy the kind of time to let him do something. Man United is not a 5-minute job, especially in this moment. So don't worry about Europe. Don't worry about Man United top four. With Man United's squad, what they've got, with the right manager organising them, there's no way Man United should not be in that top four. They're too good. You've got 37-year-old Ronaldo who's still scoring goals as if he's 28. You know what I mean? That's more than enough. The goals, the amount of goals that Cristiano's got, if he had them, the team behind him just doing their jobs and, you know, doing the midfielders, whether they're holders, whether they're number 10s, whatever, if they just done it in a structure and a system, Man United would be in the top four at a canter. But whatever happened, for whatever reason, it's not happening. So what's got to happen now is that everything's got to be back down to ground zero. Ten Hag comes in, and without European football, if that's what it's going to be, the man just does his thing.
Yeah.
Just do your thing.
Amen to that. Very quickly, since we're talking about resets, another quick, just a quick chat for a team that's had a huge reset in the last couple of games, Burnley. So now Burnley with two wins in two, 3 goals scored, none conceded, wins over Southampton and Wolves. That is a huge surge for them. So just a shout out for them. Wow. Should have covered that in more depth, but obviously we're like. News. But yeah, that's what Burnley are doing is frankly incredible.
Yeah. People thought they were gone. But there's life in the old Burnley dog, yeah.
Absolutely, there's life in it.
Quick shout for WSL. I was fortunate enough. What a beautiful day I had yesterday. Watched the Merseyside derby, then left and then went and watched Arsenal play Everton. Very, very good performance. Very professional performance from Arsenal. And they needed to win it. You know, Chelsea doing their stuff as well. So, you know, it was a good game. I thought it was a very good game. I thought, you know, watching Arsenal, I'm feeling very sorry for Steena at the minute because she's doing a lot of work up there. She's very good link-up play. I don't think she's getting as many opportunities as she should. And she scored a goal yesterday, which was fantastic finish. And it wasn't offside. Because, like, even this goal, what we did score, Caitlin Ford scored, the ball from Leah was absolutely magnificent. And in respects of the offside, for the linesman to give that, the assistant to give that and give Steena's offside. And I watched it again this morning. And I thought to myself, from a forward's point of view, that's so fucking frustrating because you're hardly getting a lot from your team. You're doing a lot of work. She got taken off again yesterday. She scores a perfectly good goal and it's kind of taken away from her simply because I really felt for her yesterday. Chelsea ain't losing again, though. Moose, Chelsea ain't losing again. They're not losing. They're going to do it. Because even with 10 players, they were on the charge. They beat them, for me, at a canter.
They're going to grind it out, aren't they? They're going to grind it out.
Yeah, they are going to. Emma's got the look in her eye as well.
Segue, just talking another team that ground it out to finish. Just a quick shout for Real Betis winning the Copa del Rey late the other night. Yes. Against Valencia.
Yes.
So Valencia had last won it in 2019. Yeah. Betis hadn't won, I think, since 05. And Betis are like, they were in a position of being... They played some really beautiful football the last few seasons, Betis. And it was one of those ones where, a bit like Poch's Spurs, where you're like, if you don't win something, people won't give you credit for the beauty of what you created on the field. And I'm just so happy that they managed to close it out.
Mm-hmm. Fourth trophy in their history, man.
Amazing.
Delightful. I sent Hector a message.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah, Hector's... because he got the assist for the opener.
He was so happy. It was beautiful.
Listen, that was like old school. You know, when you write what vintage Bellerin, I know he's young still, but like it was like vintage Bellerin. Like that was absolute peak. And it was. I love that he combined with Borja Iglesias for the goal because he's, you know, brilliant footwork, centre forward, brilliant footwork. Got named, I think, the tournament MVP after the game. And the winning penalty was scored by Miranda. And Miranda had been at the game when they last won. He was at the last Copa del Rey final as a kid.
Wow.
So like years later, he turns up and like scores the winning penalty. A really, really good game this. It was 1-1 after just half an hour. Hugo Dura got the equaliser for Valencia. And thereafter, just like so much intensity. Like, these are two teams that you look at like La Liga and it's had a tough couple of years restructuring. But these are two teams who've popped up every now and again and provided the kind of performances that keep the rest of the league honest.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so that, you know, they're less heralded teams, Betis and Valencia. But very often when you watch La Liga, and there's a team that like a top team that goes on and does something big in Europe, there will be an absolute chasing by Betis or Valencia a few weeks earlier. Mm-hmm. Like, so they're one of those teams that really, really make the league a great one. And yeah, shout out to Hector. He deserves some flowers, I think. Yeah. Well, you're the flower provider.
Well, so to be honest,
formally give them.
Joaquin. Is how old's Joaquin now?
40. Listen,
and he won the last Copa del Rey as well.
Listen, I wasn't running for the bus at 40, and this guy is right cutting up the lead.
Oh my God! You know something? Just quickly, we're going to cover the second leg of the Women's Champions League as well. So I'm quite looking forward to that game. I'll speak to you guys soon. Thank you so much, man. It's a pleasure.
Always a joy.
Guys, I'll speak to you soon.
See you soon for sure.
See you soon.
God bless, man. God bless. Thank you very much, Musa Kwanga. Thank you very much, Carl Anker. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget Stadio coming later in the week. We'll be back next week. What an emotional, great week I've had. It's been fantastic. I'm glad you've been able to share it with me. But we'll speak again next week when I'll be less emotional. Unless, of course, Arsenal lose. But hey, let's hope they don't. I'll see you next week anyway.